Now, this should be evident from what has already been said. It's the Bodhisattva who builds the Buddha land. That is to say, who builds the pure Buddha land. It's the Bodhisattva who sets up the ideal environment for the leading of the spiritual life. It's the Bodhisattva who purifies the Buddha land, as the text has it. And of course, a Buddha can create a pure land too, but generally, it is the Bodhisattva who does so. And he does so in fulfillment of his Bodhisattva vow, which of course is to attain supreme perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all living beings. Now, we've been speaking of the Bodhisattva in the singular. I've said that he builds the Buddha land. But at the beginning of one of the passages which I quoted, Ratnakara asks the Buddha to explain the Bodhisattvas, that is to say, S apostrophe, not apostrophe S, the Bodhisattvas' purification of the Buddha field. And the Buddha says in reply, I will explain to you the purification of the Buddha field of the Bodhisattvas, plural. So Bodhisattvas are spoken of in this particular passage in the plural. It is they, apparently, who will purify the Buddha field. It is they who will build the Buddha land. And further on, the Buddha says, noble sons, a Buddha field of Bodhisattvas springs from the aims of living beings. Again, the plural form. Not Bodhisattvas, though, but living beings this time. But in both cases, the plural form is used. So what does this mean? An advanced Bodhisattva, according to the Mahayana, is quite capable of purifying the Buddha land, or building the Buddha land, single-handed as it were. It's not beyond his capacity. Just as the magician is capable of creating the magical elephant, single-handed, as we saw last week. But what would be the use? You can create a Buddha land, can give people a glimpse of it, can even keep them in it for a little while. But you can't keep them in it indefinitely. You can't even keep them in it for very long. Not even if you're a Bodhisattva. So why is this? Well, it's because they don't want to stay in it indefinitely. They don't feel at home in it. They're not ready for it. And there's a little Indian story that illustrates this point. In this story, after all the sublime things that we've been hearing about Buddha lands and Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we do come rather down to earth, but never mind. The story is about a woman who sold fish. She apparently lived in a small village on the banks of a big Indian river. And every week she took her fish to the market. And she took her fish to the market in a big wicker basket. And one week, for some reason or other, it took her. You know how these things happen, especially those of you who've ever worked on the stalls. It took her rather a long time to sell her fish. So she decided that rather than make her way back to her village so very late at night, she'd better stay in that market town overnight. So fortunately, she found a flower shop open, still open. You know, as an Indian flower shop is like, it doesn't sell, you know, cut flowers in bunches, as our flower shops do. Usually, Indian flower shops sell very sweet-smelling garlands of flowers and little bunches of flowers for the ladies to put in their hair. But they're always very, very sweet-scented indeed. So fortunately, this woman who just managed to sell her fish, she found the flower shop open still. And the flower seller was very sympathetic, the shopkeeper was very sympathetic, and he allowed her to spend the night in his shop. So quite late at night, she lay down to sleep among the flowers, the sweet-smelling flowers. But she tossed and she turned, and she couldn't sleep. She couldn't bear the scent of the flowers. They were so sweet, so beautiful. So what did she do, we're told? She got her old fish basket, which of course was smelling of fish, and she put it right next to her, right by her nose. And after that, she slept quite soundly. So we might laugh at the woman who sold fish, but we ourselves are in just the same position. She felt uncomfortable in the flower shop amongst all those sweet-smelling flowers. But we would feel no less uncomfortable in the Pure Land. We'd want to introduce some equivalent of her smelly old fish basket into the Pure Land. We'd want to introduce some distraction, some physical or mental distraction. Probably want to bring our TV set or our motorbike or our record collection or our girlfriend or our office files. We'd then feel more comfortable, more at home. But then, of course, the Pure Land would no longer be the Pure Land. So the Bodhisattva cannot keep people in the Buddha Land indefinitely. He can't keep them in it very long. He can't keep them in it against their will. That would be a contradiction in terms anyway, because the spiritual life is essentially the autonomous life, the free life, the life of emancipation. So what is he to do? What is the Bodhisattva to do? There can't be any question of his creating a Buddha Land by his magical power and then holding people in it. He may do this for a short while, but not for very long. They'll soon start getting uncomfortable, and then no more Buddha Land. The Buddha Land, therefore, has to be a joint creation. It has to be built by a number of people working together. It has to be built by a number of bodhisattvas and would-be bodhisattvas working together. One of these bodhisattvas may be more advanced than the others, may have more vision, may be even the first to attain supreme perfect enlightenment and then perhaps help others to take that final step. But all must be inspired by the same ideal, that is to say, the ideal of supreme perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all. I said a little while ago that the Bodhisattva follows the Bodhisattva path for thousands upon thousands of lives, and this applies not only to the Bodhisattva in the singular, but to the Bodhisattvas in the plural. All follow the Bodhisattva path. All follow it for thousands of lives. All follow it together. We have thus a truly wonderful conception. We have the conception of the whole spiritual community, as it were, reincarnating as a spiritual community, living and working together, helping one another, life after life, until the Buddha Land is established. There's some reflection of this conception in the Pali Jataka book. Those who are the Buddha's disciples in this, his last life, the life in which he attained supreme perfect enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, are represented as having been associated with him in many previous existences. For example, Ananda, even Devadatta, Yashodhara, and so on. does a reflection of this same conception on a more ordinary level in a quite remarkable book which was published here in England just a few years ago. It's a book that tells the story of a group of people who were Cathars in southern France in the 13th century and who were reincarnated, again to use that expression, during the Napoleonic Wars, and again reincarnated in the present century in Cornwall. And in all these different lives, they were, and are, in personal contact with one another. Perhaps there's no need to elaborate. Perhaps I've said enough to make the basic point clear, enough to answer the question with which we started. The Buddha land is built by the bodhisattvas, and would-be bodhisattvas, in the plural.